This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow it's Science Friday, and Ira Flatow will be here. Much of the nuclear weapons industry is top secret, but there are parts of the atomic establishment that a tourist can see. Ira takes a trip on a nuclear family vacation, plus picking out science, technology, and environment-related tourist attractions in your neighborhood. That's all tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. Before his death in 1963, poet Robert Frost spent his summers at the Homer Noble Farm in Ripton, Vermont. Last December, a former Middlebury College employee broke in to hold a party there before it was over. 50 people showed up, many got drunk, and the house got trashed. Broken china, broken furniture, and carpet soiled with vomit and urine. 28 people, all but two of them teenagers, were charged with trespass and vandalism, and some of the guilty accepted an unusual plea agreement. They had to take a class on Robert Frost. Jay Perini, a professor of English and creative writing at Middlebury College, has been instructing some of these students in poetry and poetic justice. If you've ever been charged with vandalism, did the punishment fit your crime? Tell us your story. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Jay Perini joins us from Middlebury College Studios in Vermont. He's also the author of Why Poetry Matters. And nice to have you on the program today.
Neil, thanks for having me on.
And I gather the original idea for this sentence was from the prosecutor.
Yeah, I was just sitting at home one day, and I was, of course, like everybody in Middlebury, horrified when I heard that the Robert Frost house had been trashed. You know, I wrote Frost's biography 8 or 9 years ago. I'd worked on it for many years. And during some of those years, when I was writing that book, I actually spent the summers, part of the summers, staying at the Frost house. So the house meant a great deal to me, as it does to everybody that loves Frost and the people around here. I was horrified when the news broke that the place had been really trashed in a very bad way and that so many local kids had been involved in this terrible vandalism.
You say local kids? Were they college students or from—
No, they weren't. These were high school kids. These were, you know, 16, 17, 18-year-old kids. A few of them— I think only two or three maybe were like in their early 20s. They bought the booze, you know, they got the cans of beer. I think they turned up with 150 cans of beer. So this is just one wild teenage party that got out of control. And then the prosecutor called me. I was about to go play basketball with my pickup basketball buddies. And I get a call from the prosecutor's office saying he's talked this over with the judge. And he knew I was a Frost scholar and a poet. And he thought that the appropriate punishment for these kids, if you call it punishment, or reparations they could make for to the community, would be to come and study some poetry, Robert Frost specifically, with me. So he asked if I'd meet them, you know, in court diversion and instruct them in the poetry of Mr. Frost.
And obviously you agreed to do so. How did it go? What did you teach?
Well, you know, at first I was a bit hesitant. I wondered, is this appropriate punishment? My buddies on the basketball court, some of them collapsed in laughter on the floor. And I was skeptical at first.
Laughter at being forced well, sentenced to poetry.
The idea that that vandals would be sentenced to studying poetry. You know, some people pay good money to come hear me teach Frost at Middlebury College. And so it seemed rather peculiar. And, of course, it wasn't my choice. The judge and the prosecutor asked me if I would do this, and you know, as a volunteer thing. And I thought, well, you know, they want me to try it. And I thought, what an interesting class to teach, and a very pressured and sort of unique classroom situation. So I turned up, you know, wondering what on earth to teach. We planned two afternoon sessions, and I Xeroxed all different kinds of Frost poems, made multiple copies. There were 28 kids who agreed, for court diversion, that they would clear their criminal record if they would come and take this class on Robert Frost with me. A very unique punishment. Talk about the punishment fitting the crime, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, chose mainly to focus on the poem The Road Not Taken, partly because I assumed it's something that most high school kids in America will already know to some degree.
Two roads diverged in a yellow wood. Yes, everybody
knows. There we go.
That
two
one.
Roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not, you know, travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood, and so forth. I recited the whole poem to them from memory. I think they were a little surprised that I actually had it memorized. And then I just sort of, as I would with any class, you know, but these kids, you know, I looked at them, you know, my heart sort of broke. I mean, I've got two boys that just finished high school. I've got another boy who's just in junior high school going into high school. And so these are like my own kids. And I felt really fatherly and protective toward them. You know, they're sitting there with their, you know, acne and their baseball hats turned on backward. There were four or five girls in the bunch, and they were literally, and some of them seemed a bit trembling. And it was a scary situation for them. You know, there's a, you know, the prosecutor was sitting at the back of the room, and I was nervous too, wondering, you know, what am I going, how can I use poetry to touch them in some way and make them at least, I thought, well, why am I doing this? I mean, what if they had broken into the house, say, of the plumber down the street? This would never be happening. But I said, you guys, in a way, were lucky. You broke into this treasure trove of wisdom. I said, think of it that way. And I told them about Frost's essay, Education by Poetry, where Frost, it's a beautiful essay Robert Frost wrote. It's in his collected poems and essays. And he says, unless you're educated properly in metaphor, which is the essence of poetry, he says, you're not safe to be let loose in the world. And I said, you guys probably are not safe out there in the world quite yet. And I said, poetry might help you in some way. I said, you've got to understand metaphorical values, symbolic values. And so we talked about choices that we make in life. And actually, I found myself as I was teaching this class, when I teach the class to my students at Middlebury, it's a, you know, sophisticated group, I do a fairly postmodern reading of the poem because Frost, it's a, you know, four stanzas, and in the first three stanzas, he tells us, look, these roads are lying there, they're the same. Both that morning equally lay. In leaves no step had trodden black. So nobody's gone this way, left, or right. And then he ends the poem, I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the road less traveled by. And that has made all the difference. Now, in a postmodern reading of that poem, it's more complicated. Why does he spend the first three stanzas telling us that these roads are the same? And both that morning equally lay, in leaves no step had trodden black. And then he tells us at the end, you know, that he took the road less traveled by.
Yeah,
but there's that crucial sigh in there. And that sigh, I always tell my classes, that's the most pregnant sigh, crucial, painful sigh in English American literature, because Frost is recognizing that when he's an older man and he sits with his grandchildren around his knee, he's going to say, hey, I'm your grandpappy, the famous poet Robert Frost, four Pulitzer Prizes. I've been on the cover of Time magazine. I, you know, spoke at the Kennedy inaugural. And yet, I'm going to tell you, I took the road less traveled by. I became a poet. I marched to the beat of a different drummer, went my own way. And I'm going to know in my heart of hearts that I'm lying, that in fact we can't tell when we come to roads which way is the road taken, not taken, traveled, less traveled.
And let's see if we can get some listeners involved in this conversation. Again, our number is 800-989-8255. And our guest is Jay Perini, a professor of English and creative writing at Middlebury College in Vermont. Roger's on the line. Roger's with us from Cleveland.
Hey, hi, guys. How you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Which is fine.
I'm just calling in with a brief little note about a punishment I administered to my son one time when he and his young buddies, teenage buddies, ran amok in the neighborhood. And his punishment was to read Lord of the Flies and then sit down and discuss it with me afterwards.
So a literary punishment again.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of effective, too. I think he learned something from it, as opposed to getting grumpy and irritated with me for some other type of mean punishment. I think I gave him something to do, and he learned something about that kind of behavior and you know, the crowd behavior.
I remember that book. Aren't you afraid that he might have picked up some tips?
He picked up the what?
Picked up some tips.
Yeah, he might have burned your house down.
Well, fortunately, he didn't. I think it made some slight improvement in his behavior, although it did not cure him of being a teenager.
No, only time will do that.
Yeah, only time does that.
Thanks very much for the call, Roger.
Okay.
As a parent, you know, I think you're right. As I said, I'm a parent of three boys, and finding the right punishment for a crime is very hard. And I think America is an extremely punitive society. I think our punishments are often really harsh, really out of bounds with the crime. And here these kids, you know, had a wild party that went wrong. They did some very bad things up there. As you know, they soiled the place. They burned part of it. They trashed some furniture. Nevertheless, I always tell people that poetry is about restoration. You know, poetry is about reparation and restoration, healing people. It heals the soul in a certain way. That's what I, you know, tried to argue. And why it was kind of interesting. I just spent years working on this book, Why Poetry Matters, and making all these, you know, pronouncements about how poetry can actually help people live their lives.
Now you're asked to put it into practical application.
And then a prosecutor calls and says, hey, listen, you want to try this thing out? And I was, you know, handed a gift, really. It was wonderful.
Let's get David on the line. David with us from Sedona, Arizona.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, David.
Good. This really brings up a memory for me when I was just graduated from high school back in New Jersey, Middlesex, New Jersey, but 1 month prior to the age of 18, the age of majority, a friend of mine came over my house one evening when my parents were out and informed me that in an empty lot about a block from my house that I wasn't aware of was a grave. It turned out it was the original settling family for that area. We went down there and in our youthful exuberance, read that as teenage boy, no brain. We decided that it would be great to have the headstones. So we dug down and not only dug up the headstones, but went further and dug up the grave, at which point the houses next door decided it was time to call the police, and I was arrested along with my friend and charged with grave robbing.
And what?
A bit of a challenge. What's that?
I was just going to ask what the sentence was.
Well, the sentence was to do research on the original family that lived there, and then return the grave to its condition and tend it for 6 months.
Huh.
So
wow.
I got an education in genealogy, history, landscaping, and personal responsibility.
I might have sentenced you to read Frankenstein, but...
And have you been robbing graves since is the question.
No, I've cut back on my diet.
David, thanks very much, and it's nice to hear a rehabilitated case.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. We're talking with Jay Perini about some students, some kids, teenagers, not students, high school students in Middlebury, Vermont, who vandalized the house that Robert Frost used for many years to write poetry. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get John on the line. John with us from Spokane in Washington.
Yes, gentlemen, thank you very much. This is a wonderful, wonderful program.
Thank you.
Hey, great.
My issue was very simple. I forgot to shut the door, and my grandmother, this is 65 years ago, was very upset with the fact that living in Minnesota, if you leave the door open in the winter, the house never quite warms up. So she had me memorize a poem, and it was the wonderful poem called Godfrey Gordon, Gustopher Gore, never remember to shut the door. His mother would yell, his father implore, Godfrey Gordon, Gustopher Gore, you must remember to shut the door, et cetera, et cetera. In any event, it had its effect, and I learned to shut the door, and I have shared that with my children and with my grandchildren. And I think what you did was absolutely magnificent, and again...
Well, thanks. It's nice that poetry was involved. Your grandmother thought of poetry as a way out for you.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The irony, of course, is that I've written a couple thousand poems since, so it had a good...
There you go.
And you remembered that one.
Absolutely.
Well, John, do you still write poetry?
I absolutely do, yes.
Thanks very much for that. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So long.
Bye-bye.
And let me ask you, Jay Perini, as you were teaching these kids, Two Roads Diverged in Yellow Wood, not the postmodern reading that you were giving it to your college class, what reading did you give it to them?
Well, I really, at first it flashed in my head. I'm so used to giving that kind of fancy postmodern reading. But I realize these kids are at a very simple level here, and Frost is confronting one of the issues that we have moral choices breaking in front of us at every moment. And I said, look, kids, you're in a dark wood. You are literally and figuratively here in your life in a very dark place. And these kids were scared. They had been arrested. They could have gone to jail. They could have done some real time in jail. In fact, their older counterparts had to go to jail for 72 hours for bringing the booze. And so I said, this is a dark place in your life, and now might be the moment to start thinking about the choices you made that day, going to that party, what you did at that party. I started questioning them. I said to this one little guy, he had his baseball hat turned on backward, and he looked like his lips were trembling. And I said to him, any thoughts about this poem? And he said, I guess I took the wrong road, didn't I? And I said, you did. You took the wrong road that night. But I said, you know, the good news is that you're always in the woods in life, and there's always going to be paths, forks in the road. And I said, you've got the opportunity in front of you now to take a different path. And I said, everybody, we're all doing this. The rest of your life, you're going to be in dark woods again and again. Two roads are going to diverge in that wood, and you're going to have to make a choice this way or that way. And I said, just be reflective about the choices you make. Think about them. And I said, what maturity and adulthood are about is somehow understanding the choices we made, coming to terms with them, maybe putting a spin on them, but also understanding that until the second we're dead, we're making choices. That's what life is about.
Let's get Jack on the line. Jack with us from Wake Forest in North Carolina.
Yes, I have a story about what you all were talking about crimes and punishments fitting.
Go ahead.
So last summer, I was over in Ireland, and my parents were on vacation for 2 weeks, leaving my brother, who'd just come back for the summer from college, home alone. And he and his friends spent basically 2 weeks just partying it up at my house and pretty much vandalized almost everything there.
I saw that picture. Risky business, yes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Back,
the movie.
They decided that they were going to have him, rather than, you know, taking away stuff, they had him do all the consulting work. They had him hire everybody to fix the house.
And do you think it got through to your brother in an important way?
Oh, yeah. He hadn't had anybody over to the house since.
Well, I don't think they wanted him to be a monk, necessarily.
Oh, no. He showed a lot more responsibility in the last year. He hadn't wrecked anything, and he's always owned up to his stuff now.
Well, thanks very much, and we're glad your brother is rehabilitated, too.
Thank you.
And Jay Perini, we just have a couple of seconds left, but do you think your students got it?
Well, let's say I'm sure they'll never break into the Robert Frost house again. It's hard to know. Obviously, I can't tell. One can never tell as a teacher what effect you're really having on the student. You can plant seeds. You can make suggestions. You can try to communicate to them that poetry is, in a sense, a life or death matter, and that it is going to affect the rest of their life if they can understand these things for the better. But, when I finally left teaching them and I walked away and I saw them in the parking lot of the community building where we were, going into their parents' cars and stuff, I could just hope that that they'd been lifted and given a clear path into the future.
Jay Perini, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Jay Perini, professor of English and creative writing at Middlebury College in Vermont, also the author of Why Poetry Matters, with us today from the studio at Middlebury College. Ira Flatow's here tomorrow with Science Friday. I'm on vacation next week. Guy Raz and Ted Koppel will fill this spot. Give the newcomer a break. Have a safe, happy 4th of July. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.